But you don't have, the Spanish Jewry has poems of love and poems of nature, poems of beauty, written by great men. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, Rabbi Shlomo ben Gabriel, Eben Ezra, they wrote entire volumes of poetry that they called Shirei Chol. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote a poem about the sea, his famous Shirei Hayom. So even though even the secular poetry is infused with holiness because of the people who wrote it, but in Ashkenazic Jewry you don't find anybody writing a poem about the ocean or about a flower, because A, their life was not of such a nature that it allowed them that luxury, and B, their bent, their devotion to the study of Torah was all-encompassing. And because it was all-encompassing, it had no room for anything else. And nothing else did penetrate. I discussed with you last year, we'll discuss it at greater length, we come to it here, that Rabbeinu Osher, the Rosh, who was at the end of the Baalei Tosfos in the 13th and 14th century, moved to Spain, to Toledo, so he openly opposed the Sephardic viewpoint of the study of philosophy and of all of those types of secular studies, etc. He said that it was all counterproductive for Jewish survival. So you have here a completely different attitude, and that attitude remained to a large extent the Ashkenazic attitude until the 18th century, until the time of enlightenment. Again, we are not discussing here rights or wrongs, we're just stating what the lifestyle was and how they looked at it. And Rashi saw it that way also. Rashi's entire life was with Torah. The times that Rashi lived in were especially difficult for Jews. I mentioned to you that there was a lack of a central government. You have to realize that in the Middle Ages, in France, for instance, had three estates. The first estate was the clergy, the knighthood, rather, the noblemen. And then the second estate was the clergy, and the third estate was everybody else, the commoners. The first estate, the knighthood, they were people who were raised to fight battles. That was all they were trained for, to fight. So, therefore, they could not exist in a time of peace because they had nothing to do. They had nowhere to make a living from. So there was constant war. Constant war. We're going to discuss later the Hundred Years' War between France and England. To us, it's inconceivable, a Hundred Years' War, though Israel is on its 37th. But a Hundred Years' War, an entire century of war. But today we have the military-industrial complex that's self-perpetuating almost. If America and Russia come together and disarm, it'll be the biggest depression in the history of the world. Imagine withdrawing $335 billion from the American economy. So even if they built consumer goods, there are no consumer goods that can equal that. And part of the joy here is, as you read, the Pentagon, they get overcharged, or they over-design. They've got to spend the money. It's just too exotic already. They have now a case, I heard it on the radio today, that somebody built, manufactured for the Pentagon 461,000 helmets. And the crown of the helmet deviates from the specifications of the purchase order. So the government admits that the helmet is better